listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back. Welcome back, Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor. Really pleased to have with me Chris Powell. It's been a number of years, I think, since Chris was last on the show, but it's really good to have him with us. He has been a columnist for Journal Inquirer. That's a daily newspaper in Manchester, Connecticut, where he is. He actually worked there since graduating from high school in 1967, and he was the managing editor of the newspaper for a number of years before his retirement. But he is also the secretary-treasurer of the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. It's a nonprofit organization that aims to expose and oppose the manipulation of the gold market and related markets by central banks. Thanks for joining me again, Chris.
Oh, thanks for your invitation, Jay.
It's really good to have you. I would maybe just ask you, since you haven't been on for some time, maybe the purpose, well, we just said what the purpose of GATA is, but what how did you happen to get interested in this? I know Bill Murphy played a role in it. And it's one of those things where you're trying to let people know some egregious activities that are distorting markets and hurting people. But why did you decide to get involved in it?
Well, I got interested in gold basically by virtue of a free subscription or a trial subscription I happened to get to Jim Blanchard's Old Gold newsletter, is now run by Brian London. And this was back in 98, I guess. And Blanchard was noting that the gold price was, you know, relatively low. And I had heard somebody say buy low and sell high. So I started paying some attention to the gold market. I quickly bumped into Bill Murphy on the internet. He had just started his internet site of commentary on the metals markets, lemetropolecafe.com. And Bill was a former futures trader, and he kept noticing that the gold and silver market seemed to be manipulated. And the prices came to a technically critical point. The big bullion banks would pound on it, and he started complaining about manipulation. And I had some experience in the newspaper business with antitrust law. I also had some experience with it in my studies of U.S. history. And finally, I got sick of Murphy complaining about the manipulation. I wrote to him saying, you know, it looks like there's a lot to what you're saying, but if it's true, it would seem to be against the Sherman Act and the Clayton Act and 50-state antitrust acts. And if that's the case, somebody ought to form a committee to oppose it and hire some lawyers on a contingency basis and sue the bastards for triple damages. And if somebody wanted to start such a committee, I'd contribute $500 to it. And Bill said, hey, that's a good idea. So that's how it started. But really, within a year or so, we discovered it really wasn't just the big New York investment banks. It was basically longstanding government policy being implemented in part through the intermediaries of the bullion banks. And so we were told we really couldn't sue anybody here because the government was behind it. And the Gold Reserve Act of 1934, as amended in the 1970s, specifically authorizes the U.S. government to rig any market in the world. So we were forced to really become a publicity operation, though we did bring a couple of lawsuits, one against the Federal Reserve that actually beat them on a freedom of information point. We still have a picture of the check that the Fed had to send us to pay for our court costs, which is proudly displayed on our internet site. So when they tell you, you know, don't fight the Fed, they're not always right. You can beat them sometimes.
Well, at least you got your legal costs.
Yeah. Well, it was really a technical payment. I think something like $2,300. It didn't come close to the legal fees, but it was a sign that we had officially won the case.
Well, you know, maybe you couldn't beat them legally, but you're shedding light on an injustice, I think, when markets are manipulated. But, at first they called this, of course, the Gold Antitrust Action Committee was touting a conspiracy. And you've made the point many times, it's certainly not a conspiracy. What evidence can you pass along to our listeners?
It is a conspiracy. It's just not we've been accused of a conspiracy theory.
It's not a conspiracy theory.
It's conspiracy fact. The gold price suppression has been the open policy of the United States government for decades. We've collected many official government documents and the memoirs of central bankers, the records of the Bank for International Settlements, which is the gold broker for the central banks. We've got many documents showing that this is long-standing Western government policy. The history books show it. You can look up the history of the London Gold Pool, which was a Western central bank open conspiracy to suppress the gold price during the 1960s with the dishoarding of Western central bank gold reserves to hold the gold price at the official U.S. price of $35 an ounce. That was done in the open. After the gold pool collapsed in March 1998, the central banks retreated to find a new way of suppressing the gold price, and eventually they settled upon gold derivatives and the futures markets, where they could sell a lot of imaginary gold and divert demand for gold away from physical gold and to paper products, which they would never have to deliver upon. And that's really how the gold price suppression policy has been implemented since the mid-1970s. But there's many, many documents of this. There's even congressional testimony by Alan Greenspan back in 98, I guess, when he told Congress that, quote, central banks stand ready to lease gold in increasing quantities should the price rise. And
right.
Greenspan himself told Congress that the purpose of gold leasing by central banks was not the reason that the central banks were giving to earn a little interest on a dead asset, that the reason for gold leasing by central banks was price control. Mm-hmm. There's tons of this in our archive. If people want the documentation, I would direct them to our internet site, gata.org, and just go to the top left. You'll see an entry called The Basics, and you can click on that, and it opens a big section on the documentation and history and purposes of gold price suppression. All the documents that we have are there, and there's dozens of them, admissions by various central bankers. I think of Zeller Gilstra, who is head of the Dutch Central Bank and also president of the Bank for International Settlements. In his memoirs, he writes that the gold price was always suppressed at the behest of the United States. There's so much of it there. People really should review the documentation before they dismiss all this as conspiracy theory. You got to remember, you know, whenever government operates in secret to decide on and implement a course of action, that by definition is conspiracy.
Right.
Government is by definition conspiracy whenever it operates in secret. So, right. You know, conspiracy theory is not accurate here. This is conspiracy fact. It's longstanding government policy. You can look it up.
Yeah. Well, conspiracy theory is thrown out anytime, and as long as it's the mainstream media really hits on it, and you hear a lot of it, you say, oh yeah, it must just be some crazy jerk that's espousing some theory that hasn't any truth to it. But you know, as you point out, it's well documented, and the government itself admits it. And I remember Reginald Howe, the trial that was up there in Boston many years ago. In fact, you know, the government made its case in that regard. The banks actually that were the defendants. Anyway, I think you just answered a question that I had from a listener recently about the London Gold Pool, why it failed. Well, I guess they thought they could just swamp the markets with gold, just physical gold, throw it out on the markets, and it would go down to the point where people wouldn't, they would lose interest in it or whatever. But that didn't work, obviously, because gold went from $35 to $850 a few years later. So that's the reason that didn't work. So what they did then was come up with this paper scam, essentially. And one thing I wanted to ask, Chris, because I just saw this statistic. You're familiar with Mr. Hambro, Peter Hambro, I think, a consummate insider from the London gold market, quite a history, really just coming out recently and telling everybody this is what's going on. The futures markets are being used to distort the price, not to allow price discovery of actual physical gold. Of course, the mining companies have to sell according to what the futures price is saying it is. So that came out, from this guy, Peter Hambro, and I'm just wondering, in that related to what he was talking about, there was a massive amount of futures. The futures contracts, according to what I've seen, has gone up dramatically. It was something like normally be less than $50 billion in futures contracts. By the bullion banks, but all of a sudden in Q1 of this year, it jumped to $500 billion. I mean, it's just, if you look at the chart, it's just incredible. And I'm wondering if you have any sense of why that might be. Might it have something to do with the chaotic market conditions that we're seeing everywhere, or maybe, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, you know, who has that kind of money? I don't. You don't. Yeah. I think most retail gold investors don't. Anytime you see an explosion of that degree, it's probably based on government intervention. Mm-hmm. The government can create and deploy infinite money, and not only can it create and deploy infinite money under the Gold Reserve Act of 1934. And the amendments that have been made to it, working through the Exchange Stabilization Fund, the government can deploy secretly money in any market in the world in order to control those markets. If you want another piece of documentation, you can just go to the internet site of the CME Group, which operates all the major futures exchanges in the United States, and you can look at its filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, you can see that CME Group offers something called the Central Bank Incentive Program, which provides discounted trading to governments and central banks that use intermediary brokers approved by the Futures Exchange for trading in all futures contracts in the United States, not just not just financial futures, but commodity futures as well. Now, this program is still in effect. It's been operating for years. It never gets asked about by the financial press, but I don't think I've ever seen any mainstream financial journalism reporting that central banks are surreptitiously trading all the futures contracts and all the major futures contracts in the United States. The program exists. The filings are public. You can do what got and what U.S. Representative Alex Mooney for West Virginia has done. You can ask the Commodity Futures Trading Commission if the commission has jurisdiction over manipulative futures trading that is undertaken by or at the behest of the United States government, or is such manipulative trading legal, and the CFTC has no jurisdiction over it. The CFTC will not answer the question, won't answer it not only for GATA, but not answer it for Representative Mooney. Now, if that doesn't tell you what's going on, I can't help you. But the CFTC will not answer the question as to whether government trading directly or through intermediaries that manipulates the futures market in the United States is subject to CFTC jurisdiction or not. And since they can't answer the question, I think I know the answer.
Yeah, it would seem so. Well, the London gold pool failed. And I'm wondering if some point in time, this system might not fail as well. And I have to wonder if you have any thoughts about Russia and China, which have been building their gold reserves dramatically over the last decade or so. And of course, Russia just recently indirectly attaching the ruble to gold and more directly the ruble to natural gas and oil, and also now I understand to food. So unfriendly countries, if they want to get food from Russia, they're going to have to pay in rubles. Likewise, natural gas and oil. I have to think geopolitically, Russia and China must know the kind of financial ruin that we're creating for ourselves through this massive indebtedness that is growing so much more rapidly than income. That we're really causing our country, our central bankers are, our politicians, basically to bankrupt our country. Do you have any thoughts about what might bring this conspiracy to an end?
Yeah, look, we know that the Russians know all about what's been happening with gold. Back in 2004, the deputy chairman of the Russian Central Bank, Oleg Mazeyskov, gave a speech to the London Bullion Market Association summer meeting at the Kempinski Hotel in Moscow. The only words in English he spoke were Gold Antitrust Action Committee. Which was very surprising to us because, to the best of our knowledge at that time, we'd never had any contact with anyone in Russia. But as early as 2004, the Russian Central Bank knew very much about Gada's work. There have been many reports in the government-controlled financial press in China about gold market manipulation by the United States and its allied governments. Those reports are posted on our internet site. So, and these reports came out in the WikiLeaks cables that were leaked from State Department records. So we know that not only does Russia know all about the gold price suppression policy of the United States, well, we know that China knows, and we know that the United States knows that China knows, because the Chinese news reports about U.S. gold price manipulation were cabled back to the State Department in Washington. Yeah. I think every major central bank knows the rigging that's been going on and is probably cooperating with it for good or bad purposes. How does it end? You know, it could end in the so-called big reset that people are speculating about. Yeah. It could end as a geopolitical aggression by some power that resents the dominance of the dollar. Look, Russia or China or South Korea, any country with a reasonable foreign exchange surplus could.
All right, Chris, we're going to have to leave it go at that. We're out of time. I want to thank you so much for that. I'm sorry we have to cut you off, but that is very, very interesting. And people can go to the Gold Antitrust Action Committee. How they can get a list, or they can get on your mailing list. How do they do that real quick?
Yeah, go to gata.org, and in the right-hand column, you can sign up for our daily dispatches. And, we try to keep people informed of things that might be interesting to them.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Well, that is it for this week, folks. Next week, Peter Kraut will be with me to talk about The Great Silver Bull Market. That's a book that he The Great Silver Bull is a book that he wrote, and we didn't have enough time for him to talk about all the great bullish fundamentals for silver, despite the fact that it's been manipulated downward, and another thing I didn't ask Chris about. But he'll be here to talk about that next week, and also Quentin Henning is back to talk about the great Iska deposit that is turning into being one of the largest silver deposits in the world. So we'll be hopefully you'll tune in next week. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.